This is the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, the farce keeps expanding and expanding, getting more silly and worse and stupid and threatening and dangerous and pathetic and hilarious all at the same time. It doesn't appear to have anything that is affecting the momentum of all of this stupidity. James Carville on CNN said that it didn't matter what the Senate did. He didn't care what the Senate did. President Clinton wasn't leaving office until his term was up because he was elected by the people. And we're going to get all of the enemies of President Clinton, all of those who went after him, everybody, whoever... blah, 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 etc., 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 ad nauseum. Lie upon lie upon lie upon lie. Bluster, arrogance. The unbelievable arrogance of these people. And the lies that they tell. They know what the facts are. This is a war, ladies and gentlemen, between the will of the majority and the rule of law. It's as simple as that. It's between the philosophy of Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels, Kant, Hegel, railed against Aristotle. It is secular humanism against the moral bastion of the foundations of the religious world. It is those who want to live lives of pleasure, irresponsible, for a few seconds of ecstasy in some sleazy motel somewhere, they're willing to kill a generation of children. Railed against those who believed and still believe that murder is wrong. It is the world of the hedonist against the world of reason and responsibility.
Everybody knows that the captain lied. Everybody got this good. like the mama or the dog just died. Everybody's hands are in their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rule. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Heard the railings of the supporters of the most immoral, most chronic liar and opportunistic murderer in the history of the United States of America. You've all heard these people, haven't you? Say that this is just hatred of the Republicans for President Clinton. That they're going after him because they hate him. There's that hate word again. They always label anyone with whom they disagree as a hater. Not true. It's not about sex. It's not about what President Clinton did or did not do in private between consenting adults with Monica Lewinsky. It's about the lies he told when asked about it under oath. Under oath to a grand jury. It's about the obstruction of justice of him and his cronies in the White House to try to prevent anyone from ever knowing that he had lied. And it's about a lot of other things, ladies and gentlemen, that have not yet bubbled to the surface. This week, watch for a major expose involving yet another one of President Clinton's crimes. You're going to see it come out. If it doesn't come out this week, it will be because someone had a pang of compassion for the president during the Christmas season, but it will come out. And very soon, ladies and gentlemen, a tremendously devastating revelation of facts. I know what they are, but I will not forewarn the world. You're going to discover these facts for yourself within the next few days. They say that because the American people want Clinton to stay in office, that the Senate should not hold a trial, but should instead issue a little pat on the wrist, a little censure to someone who has committed a felony for which you and I would go to prison for many years. Many, many years, there would be no mercy shown upon us, and it wouldn't make any difference how many of our fellow citizens didn't think we should be in prison. We would be, and you all know it. And so do all these silly, brainless supporters of that traitor in the White House. He's allowed the sale of so much of our military technology to be turned over to communist China that if they wanted to project intercontinental ballistic missiles with atomic and hydrogen warheads on them to the United States tonight, they could do so. Whereas before President Clinton came in office, they could not do so. Not now, nor in the foreseeable future, nor in 20 or 30 years, most probably. But they could tonight if they wanted to. And they say that since Clinton did not abuse the powers of the office of the president, that nothing should happen to him. And they keep citing these skewed polls. The day after the president was impeached, all of a sudden his approval rating jumped 10 points. Bullshit. You see, we had our people contact the polling stations, the polling organizations, the polling networks. We asked them how the polls were conducted. And I don't have time on this broadcast to tell you the results of that, ladies and gentlemen. It will be published probably in issue number 21 of Veritas. The polls were skewed. Without any doubt, the polls were skewed. Most of them were conducted within the state of New York. A great many of them within the city of New York City. Most of those polled were Democrats. Over 60% in every single poll were Democrats. The majority of those left were independents, and then a small minority were Republicans, or who would call themselves conservatives, whether or not they called themselves Republicans. Now, don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen. As you well know, I do not support the Republican Party, nor the Democrat Party, nor Ross Perot's party, nor the libertarians. I despise the party system, as a matter of fact. And it doesn't matter which one of them gets elected, the same thing is going to happen. We've seen that. We know that. But they are preparing you to accept the treason and the criminal atmosphere that democracies bring with them. The rule of the mob. So what if he's innocent? We're going to lynch him. Get out of the way, sheriff, or we'll mow you down. There used to be sheriffs in this country who would stand up and face down the mob, ladies and gentlemen, because they understood what the rule of law meant. They understood the definition of a constitutional republic under law. Not today. Not today. I doubt if you could find one sheriff anywhere in this country that would stand alone in the middle of the street to face down 1,000 people who came to lynch the prisoner in his jailhouse. Because after all, this is a democracy. Not on your life. Not on your life. But if the American people keep buying these lies and scams and skewed polls and the brainwashing of the boob tube, it soon will be. And once it is, there's no turning back. And they believe that since Clinton is not guilty of the abuse of the powers of the office of the presidency, nothing should happen to him. He should be able to serve out his term. And Clinton, in his arrogance, when asked how he felt after being impeached, smiled and said, "Oh, not too bad. I'm enjoying myself, having a good time." His arrogance has no bounds. But you see, President William Jefferson Clinton is guilty of abusing the power of the office of the president. William Jefferson Clinton is guilty of the abuse of power of the office of the president, despite the claims of his supporters. I can prove that the president has used, is using, and intends to further use the power of his office to destroy anyone whom he considers to be an enemy of his administration. I will be most happy to testify to the facts in the Senate during the trial to impeach William Clinton. But what do you want to bet? It won't be allowed. I am an American patriot. I have served my country for most of my life. I served honorably in the United States Air Force and the United States Navy. I was a patrol boat captain in the harbor of Da Nang and on the Quaviet River attached to the Office of Naval Security and Intelligence headquartered at Camp Carter in the Vietnam War. I was presented the Navy Achievement Medal with a V for Valor and the Navy Commendation Medal with a V for Valor for service in the war. Not one man under my command was ever wounded or killed while he remained under my command, and I engaged the enemy more than any other boat on the river or in the harbor. I served on the intelligence briefing team for the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet, Admiral Bernard Clary, at Makalapa, Hawaii. I also served as the Petty Officer of the Watch in the Command Center, and was the sole person in charge of the KL-47, which was the crypto machine where top secret Q, SI, and special category messages were received and sent. I was responsible for changing the crypto codes, and with the officer of the deck, I helped to decode or encode messages. I saw everything that there was to see when I was there standing my watch. While stationed at SIGPAC Fleet, I was granted a top secret QSI security clearance, which eventually allowed me to witness and read documents which outlined that a world government would become a reality because of the alleged visitation to the Earth by an extraterrestrial race. I have found evidence that supports my belief that the so-called extraterrestrial race is an invention, a la the report from Iron Mountain, in order to present an artificial threat to the Earth to facilitate world government. I was transferred to the USS Oriskany, CVA 34, an attack aircraft carrier, upon completion of my tour at SIGPAC Fleet. I was aboard the Oriskany when President Nixon resigned. 3 days before he announced his resignation, I was sent to the comm shack to pick up a message from the Joint Chiefs of Staff for the captain. I delivered the message to the navigator, Commander Doherty, in the chart room. He delivered the message to the captain. I and Commander Doherty both read the message, and we know that the captain also read the message. The message stated, upon receipt, you will no longer accept any orders from Top Hat. Acknowledge receipt. Top Hat was the code name for the President of the United States of America in the White House. I asked the captain what he was going to do, as the message was a clear violation of the Constitution for the United States of America and the doctrine of civilian control over the military. The captain told me he would wait and see if any orders came from the President or the White House and make a decision at such time. Ladies and gentlemen, no message ever came from the President or the White House. And no message ever came because, of course, the military controlled all communications facilities, and no such message could have been transmitted once the Joint Chiefs had embarked upon their coup. For that is exactly what had occurred, a military coup in the United States of America. I had planned to make the military my career. Needless to say, I could no longer pursue that course. What I thought I had been serving was not at all what I was really serving. I left the Navy with an honorable discharge on December the 11th, 1975. I had spent the last 24 years of my life researching and exposing the treason within our government, and make no mistake about it, ladies and gentlemen, it is treason. I wrote a book entitled Behold a Pale Horse, published an exposure of the Oklahoma City bombing entitled Oklahoma City Day One by Michelle Marie Moore. I publish a national newspaper entitled Veritas, and I host a worldwide broadcast, which began on May 4, 1992, entitled The Hour of the Time. You are listening to it. The subject of all of these is subversion from within our government and the projected outcome. What I have discovered may be read upon our website under the link titled Majesty 12. Shortly after the bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building, Rush Limbaugh read a White House memo on the air during his broadcast. The White House memo named me, William Cooper, the most dangerous radio host in America. Not long afterward, I learned that the FBI, the IRS, FinCEN, and all of the other investigative federal agencies had mounted major investigations of myself and my wife. The investigations, which all began on the very same day, were ordered by the White House. The investigations lasted for 2.5 years. The culmination was that warrants have been issued for our arrest, even though we are not criminals. We are loyal Americans who obey the law, the real law. We know that the Constitution for the United States of America is the supreme law of the land. I also learned that my FBI record, which was promulgated when I applied for my security clearances in the Air Force and Navy, was included with those other FBI files, which were discovered to have been unlawfully obtained by the White House. The FBI files, which became known as Filegate. We, this little family, ladies and gentlemen, me, my wife, and my two little daughters, were targeted by President William Jefferson Clinton and his administration as enemies of the administration. Because I told the truth in my book, Behold a Pale Horse, in Veritas, in Oklahoma City Day One, and on the air during my worldwide broadcast, I documented that truth and I sourced it. And I struck out against international Marxism, socialism, communism, illuminism, all of the things that are bent upon the destruction of the world that we knew and loved, the principles and ideals which the founders established, the greatest, freest, most opportunistic nation on the face of this earth, which gave birth to a people with the highest standard of living and the highest educational achievement in the history of the world. People who truly lived free, rights, of the individual were recognized and secured under a constitution and a Bill of Rights. I reminded the American people who had forgotten what all of these things were. I told them the truth about the philosophies of the New World Order. I exposed them. I drug out the secrets from the dark corners and under the rocks and out of the stinking, putrid holes. And I exposed them to the light of the day. We are not the only people who have been targeted for destruction by President Clinton and his administration. What Clinton has done to us is clearly, without any doubt whatsoever, abuse of the powers of the president. Me, my wife, and our children live from day to day terrorized, constantly under the threat of murder or imprisonment, which we know will result in murder, by the treasonous powers that have infiltrated our government to destroy it from within. Many other American patriots have been destroyed by these same despicable traitors. I am absolutely 100% completely loyal to the constitutional republic that was established by the founders under the rule of law. The Constitution for the United States of America is still my supreme law of the land. In the rest of the nation, it has been subverted. It still rules on this mountaintop in the Round Valley of Arizona. Indeed, I have devoted my entire life to the restoration of constitutional Republican government, to the liberty and freedom of all people, of all races, of all religions, of all places of ancestral origin. And I am ready and willing to die in defense of that cause at any time that God deems it necessary for me to do so. I am not now and will not ever be loyal to the de facto tyranny inhabiting Washington, D.C. that fraudulently calls itself our government. I am not loyal to William Jefferson Clinton. The lawful government, as established by the Founding Fathers, under the principles and ideals enshrined within the Constitution for the United States of America and the Bill of Rights, must and will be restored. It must and it will be restored. All traitors must eventually be arrested. They must be tried by a jury of their peers under the law. And if convicted, they must be hung from the highest trees in this land. May God bless America.
Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows that the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows that the boat's leaking. Everybody knows that the captain's mad. Everybody got this broken finger, like a bottle of a dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants the box of chocolates at the Don Stem Road. Everybody knows. Everybody knows you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. And everybody knows that you've been. there were so many people you just had to leave out your clothes.
I grew up on a beef farm in Missouri, and like everybody else that raises livestock, we raised a lot of our own feed to stay in business, and we raised corn and soybeans and hay, and we grind this stuff up into a flour, and we'd add vitamins and minerals and trace minerals, make pellets, and you feed those calves for about 6 to 9 months, and then you ship them off to be butchered or maybe to other feeders, and you always save back the very best ones for yourself, and you knock them in the head and eat them. It's a real simple cycle on the farm. And the thing that fascinated me as a teenager was that we went to a great deal of trouble for those calves, and yet, as a family, we ate out of the very same fields. We'd keep back 5 rows of corn for ourselves. We had a garden at the end of the field where we grew our peas and beans and squash and tomatoes. And we wanted to live to be 100 with no aches and pains, and we didn't give ourselves the very same vitamins and minerals and trace minerals that we gave the calves. And I always used to ask my dad, I'd say, "Hey, Pops, how come we go to all that trouble for those calves and not for ourselves?" And he'd say, "Shut up, boy. Getting farm fresh food, fresh air, lots of free exercise. Don't ask complicated questions." And I was glad to get rid of the farm exercise and go to ag school at the University of Missouri. And there my major was in animal husbandry and nutrition. My minor was in field crops and soils. And I began to learn technical things about soil chemistry and how it related to tons and bushels per acre and ag economics. But I didn't get an answer to my basic question until I became a freshman veterinary student at the University of Missouri. And there I learned that the reason why we put all these vitamins and minerals and trace minerals and animal feeds, bottom line, is because we don't have insurance for them. We don't have Blue Cross, Blue Shield, major medical hospitalization, Medicare, Medicaid. And if we were to use a human healthcare type of system for animals, it'd be sticker shock for you. Your hamburger would cost you $275 a pound. Boneless, skinless chicken breast would be $450 a pound. A dozen eggs would be $50 just to pay for the healthcare. So we learned that we could keep the price of animal products, such as meat and dairy and poultry and eggs, down to where the average American could afford them simply by significantly reducing or totally eliminating health care costs, and we do that in animals by preventing and curing diseases with nutrition. Well, after graduating vet school, I went to Africa for a couple of years and got to work with Marlon Perkins from the old Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom days, and that was kind of a kick. Got to play Frank Buck, use a tranquilizer gun, tromp all over Central and South Africa for a couple of years. And then Marlon sent me a telegram and invited me back to the States. He'd gotten a $7.5 million grant from the National Institutes of Health. And this was more than 30 years ago, and this was to study pollution and ecology and the environment. And my job as a wildlife veterinarian on the project was to do autopsies of animals that died of natural causes in the big zoos around the United States. And I was supposed to identify or find a species of animals that was ultra-sensitive to pollution. And we're going to use that animal much like the old coal miners used to use canaries. You know how that goes. They take a canary down in the mine, and if methane gas or carbon monoxide were to leak into the mine, the canaries were more sensitive than the men and would drop off the perch and die, and long before the men were in danger of suffocating or blowing up. Well, to make a long story short, after some 12-plus years of working on this project and done some 17,500 autopsies and over 454 species of animals plus 3,000 human beings for a comparison, and what I learned was that every animal and every human being who dies of natural causes dies of a nutritional deficiency disease. And I got kind of excited about nutrition again, and I wrote 75 scientific papers on the subject, wrote chapters for 8 multi-author textbooks, actually contributed a textbook myself, 1,000 pages, 2,000 illustrations, and through the news releases that were in the big universities I worked with, I was on 2020 with Hugh Downs and Geraldo before he got his nose broke for the first time. That was a kick. From 1,700 newspapers around the world through the UPI and AP news wire services. And with all this public exposure and with all this scientific exposure, I couldn't get people who are in a position of authority, either in medical research or in politics, to get too concerned or interested in preventing and curing diseases in human beings with nutrition, just like we did in animals. Well, I got frustrated enough. I went back to school in Portland, Oregon, became a physician, and I practiced there for 12 years as a general family practitioner. And I sewed up chainsaw wounds, delivered babies, used everything that I'd learned in veterinary nutrition on my human patients. And it was no surprise to me that it worked just as well in people as it did in animals. Well, to get started, I always like to talk about longevity. And the human being has the genetic potential to live healthily, to be 120 to 140. And I'm going to prove that to you in just a minute. Unfortunately, Americans do a lousy job when it comes to longevity. Our average lifespan in the United States is 75.5, about half we're genetically capable of. And in 1990, when the World Health Organization examined the top 32 industrialized nations on Earth, the United States came out 17th. There's actually 16 other countries whose peoples live longer than we do. We ranked 19th in healthfulness. That meant that there were 18 other countries whose peoples live longer than we do before they developed heart disease and cancer and diabetes and arthritis and osteoporosis. We ranked 23rd when it came to live births and first-year survivabilities of babies. And we ranked dead last, 32 out of 32, when it came to preventing birth defects. Now, what all this means is we have the highest-priced healthcare system in the world, but not the best. It also means that we have the most envied healthcare system in the world, but not the best. We have the most technologically advanced healthcare system in the world, but not the best. Well, what we're going to do this evening, just before we get into this longevity stuff, we need to eliminate a bunch of medical dogma. These things are called medical myths, so I like to call them medical cacas. This was a study that was done in 1947, and they took laboratory animals, and they had one group was a pure vegan, nothing but vegetable material, grains and fruits and vegetables and nuts. The other group had the same basic diet with all the supplements, but they just added some veal powder, some ground-up veal, and some ground-up bone meal and so forth. And the rats that were vegans or vegetarians lived 555 days, and the rats that ate the omnivore diet with the meat as well as the vegetables and grains lived twice as long, 1,020 days. And so that's kind of interesting. People say, well, that's just laboratory animals, and they're not spiritually elevated and all that kind of stuff. So let's keep looking here. There was a great study that was published in the Denver Post in May of 1996, just about a year ago. And this study was done by the state social services from the state of Colorado, and they identified all the 415 centenarians in the state of Colorado living at that time. These were people over age 100. The oldest was 111. 415 of them, and they sent a social worker out to each one of them, gave them a hot meal, got their blood sugar up, and then sat there eyeball to eyeball and asked them all these questions on 5 pages of the questionnaire. And they were looking for things that they could point to and say, this is why these people live to be 100. They found out that two-thirds of these 415 centenarians were women, one-third were men. So you fellows can live to be 100 if you do everything right. They found out that every race, every religion, every culture was represented in these 415 centenarians. So no group, no religion, no race, no culture had a monopoly on living to be 100. The only one that was 100% of the 415 centenarians, the only one that was 100% was they were all heavy red meat eaters. Every one of them ate red meat twice a day. There was not a single vegetarian in the bunch. Now, there has to be something wrong with this theory about being a vegetarian is helpful. At any rate, number one, 100% were all heavy red meat eaters. Number two, 85% still worked after the age of 100. And they were, did primarily paperwork for family businesses and babysat and did dishes and garden and stuff like that. 75% took a nip of whiskey every day. Now, you don't want to get them out of order. You want to do the red meat twice a day, and if you get around to it, a nip of whiskey might be okay. There is no proof in the pudding that being a vegetarian has any health or longevity benefit. That's a theory, and it's not panning out. Then there's a guy up in the University of California, San Francisco. This guy wrote several books on longevity, 120-year diet. You can live to be 120 years of age. And he's always said that if you eat less, you're going to live longer. And this came from these old studies from 1947 where they restricted calories. And they took rats and they let them eat free choice, and they found out just how much a rat would eat when you let them eat whatever they wanted. Then they restricted those calories by 30%, and they had another group, and they restricted the calories by 60%. And they came out and said those rats that had 30% less calories than the original group lived 50% longer, and the ones who had a 60% restriction of calories lived to be twice as old as the ones who got free choice food. And everybody got excited about restricting calories. But what the original article said back in 1927 was that not only do you restrict calories, but you have to keep the vitamins and minerals and trace minerals at the same level. Even though you're cutting the calories, you keep the vitamins and minerals and trace mineral levels at the same level. Now, what that means is that even though you had restricted calories, the calories that were there were more nutrient dense. There's more minerals, more vitamins, more trace minerals per calorie in the restricted diet, because there was the same amount, the exact same amount, in the restricted calorie diet of vitamins and minerals and trace minerals as there was in the free choice diet. Now, when a human being cuts his calories by 60% and they don't supplement, whatever nutrition might be, by chance, might be in that food, they're actually restricting their trace minerals and vitamins and minerals. Well, there was an honest article in February of this year, Eating Less May Lead to Longer Life. Again, that theme song I keep singing about. They did this study on rhesus monkeys. They moved up from rats to rhesus monkeys. And then they said both groups received the same vitamins and minerals. And it's just sort of a little afterthought in this article. Then there's the subject of meditation and yoga. This, of course, was brought to the United States during the 60s and 70s by the hippies and flower children. It looks like there might be some grown-up hippies in this room tonight, about the age group, the right age group. This kind of died out for a while during the 70s and 80s. And during the 90s, this concept of meditation and yoga has been reawakened by a best-selling author by the name of Deepak Chopra, who lives not too far away from here, has his clinic and so forth. But there is no proof in the pudding that meditation and yoga has any longevity benefit. Certainly it can calm you down during tax week and calm you down during finals week and that sort of stuff, not longevity. Then here's one. This fellow kind of tried to cover all bases. A guy by the name of Tom Dowling, age 47, exercised. He was a well-known marathon runner. He was a vegan, and he meditated. And he started getting irregular heartbeats after being a marathon runner of some note. Everybody knew him, and he was kind of the athletic hero of the Midwest, actually from Kansas City, Missouri. And he started getting irregular heartbeats, so he went into the doctor's office for a stress test, and he died an hour after the stress test, that treadmill thing. They should have just given him some selenium. Then there's the subject of organically grown food. Everybody knows that organically grown food are grains, vegetables, fruits, and nuts that are grown on soils that have not had any sprays on them for 2 or 3 years, depending on the state that's certifying it. And I think everybody will agree that the more organically grown food that you put in your diet, the less likely you are to get cancer because you're reducing the amount of chemicals in your life. But a lot of people make the unreasonable extension that if you eat organically grown food, you don't have to take any vitamins and minerals and trace minerals because you get everything you need from your four food groups if they're organically grown. Well, I had a good friend by the name of Christopher Bird for many, many years, over 20 years, and Chris was a best-selling author on books on organically grown food. He was an expert in the subject, and I was always trying to give him vitamins and minerals, and he refused to take them, and he'd tell me, Doc, I bring my own cooler. I don't eat any hotel food. I bring my own organically grown food, and so I don't need to take vitamins and minerals. Well, I was changing planes again a year ago, May of 1996, in Atlanta. Had an hour to kill between planes. Picked up the local newspaper, and guess whose obituary I found in the newspaper? Chris Bird. Of course, again, he was a best-selling author of books, The Secret Life of Plants, The Secrets of the Soil, and he died at age 68 from a ruptured aneurysm, a type of stroke, 7.5 years before the average American dies. And he led a pristine life, lived up in the mountains, had an organically grown garden, collected herbs, like Yule Gibbons, and ate wild hickory nuts and all those kind of things. And because of his belief, he died of a copper deficiency. And I'll show you in a minute that copper deficiency causes ruptured aneurysms. And it's just a tragic thing that the people have so much to give and die at less than half their genetic potential for longevity. Then there's the subject of herbs. A lot of people say to me, Doc, I don't need to take vitamins and minerals and trace minerals because I use herbs. Now, herbs are not nutrition. You have to understand that herbs are not nutrition. They are great plant medicines. They're safer. They're more economical. In most cases, they're more effective than prescription medications that doctors will give you. But they're plant medicines. If you have diarrhea, they can tighten you up. If you have constipation, they can loosen you up. If you have hypertension or high blood pressure, they can bring it down. If you have a fever, they can bring it down. But don't expect to get enough calcium or selenium or boron or copper or vitamin A from herbs. I had another good friend by the name of Tommy Bass, and he was an expert on herbs, and he lived like Yul Gibbons up in the mountains out in the east and wrote many, many best-selling books on herbs. And he died at age 88, and a lot of people say, hey, that's pretty good. He lived 12 years longer than the average American. But you're going to see in a minute that that's only half of your genetic capability, your genetic capacity for longevity. And if Tommy Bass had taken vitamins and minerals as well as the herbs, he'd probably still be alive today. There is no proof in the pudding that you can get enough nutrition from herbs. Then one of my favorites is this thing on salt. This is probably one of the bigger medical cacas, this salt thing. Doctors tell you, don't use salt. No sodium, because it's going to give you hypertension, high blood pressure. It'll give you heart disease. And they've made Americans paranoid about salt. Now, I'm a veterinarian as well as a physician. And I refuse to believe that my human patients are dumber than a cow. What's the first thing a farmer or rancher puts out for his livestock? Big salt block, right? Nobody gives any restriction on a cow. She goes out and has all the salt she wants, never gets high blood pressure. And so I always used to tell my patients, look, let's use a little common sense here. Why don't you go ahead and take a salt shaker, just salt your food to taste, go mad with the salt. Your body will tell you when to back off. And 98% of my patients would do it just because I asked them to do it. And I've been vindicated in this belief. This was actually a study that was published in the New York Times, May 22, 1996. And this study was abstracted from JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the most prestigious medical journal in the world, according to themselves. Now, in this particular journal, a Dr. Alexander Gordon Logan, who is an epidemiologist and cardiologist on the teaching staff of the medical school at the University of Toronto up in Canada, and he took 56 existing studies on hypertension or high blood pressure and restriction of salt, combined the data from these 56 studies, which included 3,505 people. He threw away all the conclusions and reevaluated the larger group. And what he found out was this. If you have normal blood pressure and you restrict salt, it will not prevent you from getting heart disease or high blood pressure. If you have hypertension or high blood pressure and you restrict salt, 97% of those with high blood pressure or hypertension who restrict salt will not get any measurable benefit. 97% will not get any measurable benefit. Zero. 2-5% get measurable benefit, but it's not significant. They're only able to reduce their blood pressure by 3.7 millimeters of mercury. So here's what Dr. Alexander Gordon Logan said in JAMA, May 22, 1996. He said, you might as well go ahead and salt your food to taste. It's a meaningless exercise. Don't get paranoid about salt. It has nothing to do with blood pressure problems. There has never been one single iota of proof that restricting salt has any benefit. It's just one of those medical myths, he called it, but I'm going to call it a medical caca. Then there's the subject of nutrition. You know, the doctors always tell you, just eat your four food groups. You don't need vitamins and minerals and trace minerals. You can get everything you need. And again, from these medical journals and hospital journals, I got some great ads. These are from like the 1950s, 1962. I want you to read this. This is from a hospital journal. This is the Kellogg's Roundtable Topics for Hospital Staff. And you see there's a doctor and two nurses, or maybe a nurse and a dietitian, the purchasing agent. Do Kellogg cereals really save me money? The floor nurse. How can I save time in the morning? Dietitian, how do I get patients to eat breakfast or enjoy breakfast? Does it say anything there about giving patients good nutrition? No. They're solving all these administrative problems with Kellogg's cereal, but nothing about nutrition. Then here's the creme de la creme of these advertisements. This is in, you notice this is a hospital journal. Okay, hospital journal, Journal of the American Hospital Association. This is actually 1962. Coca-Cola, too, has its place in a well-balanced diet. As a pure and wholesome drink, it provides quick energy, brings you back refreshed after work or play. It contributes to good health by providing a pleasurable moment. That's the level of doctor's nutritional training. After 14 years in medical school, this is where they get their nutritional information from these ads in the hospital journals. Now, this is probably the biggest fraud ever perpetuated against American people, is this cholesterol thing. Last year, Americans were so paranoid about cholesterol, we spent $117 billion for cholesterol testing alone, and it did not add 10 seconds to the American longevity. Now, I've been telling my patients, my human patients for over 20 years, to eat two eggs every morning, soft scrambled and butter, poached, soft boiled, and eat 70 ounces of red meat every month as a source of cholesterol. It's good for you. And of course, 98% would just do it. Say, boy, we love Doc Wallach. He'll let you eat 2 eggs every morning for breakfast, 70 ounces of red meat every month. And of course, it sounds like a lot, but it's only a quarter pounder a day. But at any rate, there's always these 2% who are bean counters, and they say, Doc, we love you and respect you, but you know, we read in Cosmopolitan magazine, or our cardiologist told us that you might as well shoot people in the head as to have eat 2 eggs every morning for breakfast because of all the cholesterol and heart disease. Well, I've been vindicated in this one. This was a study that was published November 15, 1995. It was the annual meeting of none other than the American Heart Association in Anaheim, California. Not the National Enquirer, but the American Heart Association. And they finally did the study they should have done 50 years ago. We did it in animals, so I never believed that cholesterol is a boogeyman that they would have you believe. They took 141 healthy volunteers with an average blood cholesterol of 227. And I get a lot of people come to me and say, Doc, you got to help me find something natural to get my cholesterol down. It's terribly high, and cardiologists want to give me these cholesterol-lowering drugs that will kill you, kill your liver, and make you blind. And I say, well, gosh, how high is your cholesterol? And they'll say, it's 240. Well, the normal blood cholesterol range is between 220 and 270. So if you have a blood cholesterol of 240 and you get a cardiologist or an internist who's trying to get your blood cholesterol down below 200, as you'll see in a minute, you want to get a new doctor. Don't buy into that. At any rate, for 6 months, they had these 141 normal healthy people with an average blood cholesterol of 227. They had them eat 2 eggs every morning for breakfast. And at the end of the 6 months, they redid their cholesterol. And of course, when they did that, their cholesterol did go up, but it went up from 227 to 233. It went up a whopping 6 points. Now, here's what the American Heart Association said after the six-month study at their annual meeting, Anaheim, California, November 15, 1995. This is a quote now from this study. Quote, we always assumed that eggs were bad for you because they contain cholesterol. But it now appears after this simple study, 2 eggs a day won't hurt, unquote, the American Heart Association. So as I tell you or suggest to you to eat 2 eggs to deal with a particular disease later on, it's been approved by the American Heart Association, so don't be shocked. Now, cholesterol really should be an essential nutrient, like calcium and vitamin A and vitamin C and zinc and so forth. You can only make 10% of your daily need. The other 90% you must get in your diet. And people get real good about restricting red meat and chicken skin and dairy products. And so it's real easy to get cholesterol out of your life. And the physicians, the medical profession, has created a whole family of diseases that are related to fat deficiencies, essential fatty acid deficiencies, cholesterol deficiencies. And one of my favorites I'll share with you, this particular disease did not exist 40 years ago. This disease did not exist 40 years ago. It was not in any medical textbook. It was not in any medical dictionary. It was not taught in any medical course. It only became a disease entity in the medical literature in 1979. Today it's the number 4 killer of adults over the age of 65 behind cardiovascular disease, cancer, and diabetes. It's Alzheimer's disease. It's a physician-caused disease, and I'm going to prove that to you in a minute. Now, people say to me, look, Doc, every member of my family has got Alzheimer's disease, and doctors tell me that it's genetic. Well, it's not genetic, and I'm going to prove that to you in a second, but if you have every family member who's got Alzheimer's disease, that means you have the same family physician. You want to get a new doctor, what they usually mean. Now, your brain is 75% by weight pure cholesterol, and if you're real good at giving up cholesterol, and you're painstakingly careful about eliminating cholesterol from your diet, what's going to happen in about 10 to 12 years? You only make 10%. Well, you start losing that myelin, that insulating stuff out of your brain. Again, makes up 75% of your brain weight. And the old squashola goes, and you get Alzheimer's disease. Now, you can prevent Alzheimer's disease. You can reduce your risk of Alzheimer's disease to almost zero if you eat 2 eggs every morning, soft scrambled, poached, or soft boiled for breakfast every morning. Not fried. Certainly no fried foods. And you want to take in all 90 essential nutrients. You want to make sure you're taking in 1,200 to 2,000 units of vitamin E every day if you have Alzheimer's in your family. And doctors just go berserk when I say stuff like that. Well, I used to say that, you know, we could prevent Alzheimer's disease in pigs and chickens. And they say, well, you show us where pigs and chickens get Alzheimer's disease. And I say, well, I can't because we prevent it. But in the experiments, when we did experimentally produce Alzheimer's disease in pigs and chickens, it's called encephalomalacia. And so you have to know how to read the veterinary literature as well as the human literature. Well, I've been vindicated in that one. Now, this is in our own University of California, San Diego, the School of Medicine, a very reputable medical school, also co-researched by the Salk Institute, also a very famous research institute. Vitamin E can ease memory loss in Alzheimer's patients. This was 4.5 years ago, July 1992. And I've been saying that over and over and over, and doctors go berserk, wanting to know, I want you to prove what you're saying. Vitamin E can ease memory loss in Alzheimer's patients. And I just send them a photocopy of this, and they say, oh, well, we have to close that investigation, because I'm just acting like a reporter here. They think I'm making this stuff up. Well, for those who say, well, that was just one study, you know, and there's no way to prove that again, this was just in the newspaper a couple days ago now. Vitamin E can slow Alzheimer's disease. Again, the University of California, San Diego. This was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Well, my favorite disease is arthritis. I love arthritis. And the reason why I love arthritis is it's easy to fix. And when you can fix something as horrible and as debilitating, as painful and as expensive and as miserable as arthritis, you get kind of excited about this concept of preventing and curing diseases with nutrition. And so I tell people about this arthritis thing all the time. So let's have a quick look at arthritis. Number one, 75 to 80% of all Americans over the age of 50 get arthritis to one degree or one type or another. And according to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, 35 to 50 million baby boomers are going to get arthritis in the next 7 to 10 years, and there's not a single medical treatment designed to prevent or fix it. Aspirin certainly doesn't fix arthritis, causes gastric bleeding and death. Tylenol doesn't fix arthritis, causes 50,000 cases of kidney failure each year, 5,000 of which are so severe you need a kidney transplant. Then there's ibuprofen, Advil, and Aleve. These things don't fix arthritis, and they cause liver disease in 2 to 5% of the users, including liver cirrhosis, even if you don't drink. And then there's methotrexate and gold shots. These things don't fix arthritis. They subdue your bone marrow so you can't make normal platelets and white blood cells. And then you have the granddaddies of all the medical treatments for arthritis, prednisone and cortisone. They don't fix arthritis. They subdue your immune system, which leaves you open to diseases far, far more horrible than arthritis. And prednisone and cortisone accelerate the loss of minerals from your bones, something you don't want when you have osteoporosis and arthritis. Now, when these prescription medications and over-the-counter medications don't work anymore to relieve pain and inflammation, the only thing left for you medically is joint replacement surgery. And I never like to send my patients in for joint replacement surgery because they never work out well. In fact, many times you're worse off after the surgery than you were before the surgery. The advantage my patients have always had is that I'm a veterinarian as well as a physician. And so I always used to tell my patients, look, we have all these nutritional formulas designed to prevent and cure diseases in animals, including arthritis. And so I tried adapting nutritional arthritis formulas designed to prevent and cure arthritis in pigeons and turkeys, dogs, cats, sheep, pigs, horses, cows, lions, tigers, and bears to human use. And it was no surprise to me. It works just as well in humans as it does in animals because it was designed to prevent and cure arthritis in pigs. And, of course, it has some really nifty stuff in it, which I've been telling people to use for 20 years. And I've literally seen tens of thousands of people who've had a regrowth of cartilage, ligaments, tendons, connective tissue, bone foundation, bone matrix. Doesn't matter if they're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. I've seen people 97 years old regrow cartilage and bone, even if they had bone-to-bone arthritis. If there's blood supply to that joint and that bone, they will regrow bone and cartilage. Well, of course, Harvard Medical School goes berserk when you say stuff like that. Well, if you can't say those things, the only thing left for people when they get bone-to-bone arthritis is joint replacement surgery. And I'd agree with them that the only raw materials you're using is Tylenol and aspirin and prednisone and cortisone. We've learned over 50 years that you can't regrow cartilage and bone using those things. Now, one of the basic things, of course, that the Harvard Medical School jumped onto, and they said, this is so ridiculous. This is so ridiculous that this couldn't work. And so they took 29 patients, arthritis patients, who had failed to respond in any way to heroic medical treatment for arthritis over 15 to 20 years. They took them off all their medication. It wasn't working for them anyway. Lined them up for joint replacement surgery, and they said, look, for 90 days before we do the surgery, they gave them a heaping tablespoonful of ground-up chicken cartilage and their orange juice every morning for 90 days. They were sort of chuckling in their beer saying nothing's going to happen. Well, here's what happened. In 10 days, these 29 people, had complete relief of pain and inflammation, something they hadn't had in 15 to 20 years. In 30 days, they could now open up a new pickle jar that had never been opened without pain to the fingers, wrists, elbows, and shoulders. In 90 days, 28 of the 29 were clinically cured. Now, this is from Harvard Medical School in the Boston VA. That meant that they had complete return, 100% return of the range of motion. All the pain and inflammation was gone in their fingers and toes and hips and knees and their neck. And certainly, many of them still had knots on their fingers because it was only 90 days. And you'd think they'd call me up, these professors, you know, of medicine from Harvard Medical School and from the Boston VA, and say, look, Wallet, we have to apologize to you. We've been bad-mouthing you for 20 years. And why don't you come up to Boston? Let's talk about the whole thing.
You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This is the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
Like a bird like a drum in an old Nissan choir out of trance in my way to be free. It was the shape of our love that twisted me if I have been on if I have been on
You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. If you would like to receive information on Dr. Wallach and his recommendations on how you can improve your personal health, call one of these two numbers right now. 1-888-403-2405. That's 1-888-403-2405. Or 1-888-701-0502. That's 1-888-701-0502. Once again, 1-888-403-2405. That's 1-888-403-2405. 303-2405 or 1-888-701-0502. The phones are open. The number is 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. We'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. I don't care. Once again, 520-333-4578. The phones are open, and we will take your calls. By the way, I want to wish all real American patriots throughout this country, and really everybody else, but especially those people, a very Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Ramadan, Merry Kwanzaa, and a Happy New Year for everybody. I don't care who you are. Real American patriots understand that our one uniting common bond is freedom, liberty, and freedom. That was the whole purpose of this country. The founding fathers were escaping from religious persecution in the old world. They did not build this nation so that someone else could religiously persecute others in their name, or in anyone's name for that matter. They wanted to establish a nation where all men could live free, where the recognition that all men are created equal and are endowed with certain unalienable creator endowed rights could live together in peace under law. Good evening. You're on the air.
Well, Mr. Cooper, this is Kevin in Nevada.
Hello, Kevin.
Yeah, well, first of all, hope you and your family have a good Christmas.
Thank you very much.
This morning on the way into work, I heard something on a little piece on the news and didn't hear much more about it for the rest of the day or anything, but something about the police agencies or whatever in the Northwest are gearing up to what they start to fight some sort of programmed terrorist or whatever they think is going to come. Did you hear anything about that?
No, I didn't, but it doesn't surprise me at all. Remember what I told you and wrote and have been saying for years? That every time they promulgate something like this in the Middle East, especially a wag-the-dog scenario like what just happened, prepare for a major terrorist attack within the United States.
Yeah, they were mentioning some of the groups or something in the Northwest and, you know, whatever. It just did. It looks like they're starting to beat up the drums and stuff to go after somebody and, you know,
yeah, the terrorist attack will not be promulgated nor carried out by the people of Iraq.
Right. Okay, well, maybe somebody else, if they heard about it and got more information, that'd just be interesting to hear more information about that.
No, I didn't hear a thing. And usually my people are right on top of everything, and usually I get information like that before anybody else in the country. But sometimes, for some reason, it slips through the cracks. I will certainly investigate it. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Anything else?
Oh, no, that's it. Just have a good night.
Okay, thanks for the call. 520-333-4578 is the number. Your number, where you can call and talk about whatever you want tonight. Tomorrow is Christmas Eve. And Christmas Eve is always a very special time for me. It's a time for family. And tomorrow night, Pooh and I will begin stuffing the turkey and getting it ready, and we will put it in the oven to cook all night at 200 degrees. We put it in, cook it for 12 hours at 200 degrees, and it comes out the juiciest, most beautiful, most golden, delicious-looking turkey you ever saw in your life. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. This is Carl from Mentor, Ohio.
Hi, Carl.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
I've got a question. After listening to your Mystery Babylon series, you had mentioned that you believe and live by the red words in the Bible.
That's correct. I try to. I'm a human being, and occasionally I slip and fall like every other human being in this world, but I try very hard to do that. Yes.
Okay, my question is to you. In the book of Revelation, I had heard you say, in your
The book of Revelation has absolutely nothing to do with the words in red in the New Testament.
Okay, I'm going to try to maybe change the subject just a little, but still in the Bible. You had mentioned that...
Wait a minute.
Okay.
the only thing that I recognize in the entire Bible are the teachings of Jesus the Christ. Period. I recognize nothing else.
Okay, this is going to lead to my next question, I guess. In the book of Revelation, I had heard you say in years past that you believed John, when he was exiled on the island of Patmos, that he was initiated into the mysteries.
No, I said that he was an initiate of the mysteries, and that when he was exiled to the Isle of Patmos, not Patmos, but Patmos, he wrote the book of Revelations as a parallel or metaphor of the initiate of the illumined ones in the mystery schools as an initiation for the entire human race. And if you've ever studied the initiation of the individual into the mysteries, you can see that the book of Revelation parallels the initiation of an initiate into such organizations as the Rites of Mithras or the Eleusinian Mysteries and even some of the higher orders of Freemasonry. They parallel each other.
I get really, really confused with that issue and other issues in the Bible.
Well, let me sort of, you know, I'm not telling you that you have to believe as I do. This is not a religious program.
I understand
that. And I believe in freedom for all people to worship at the altar of your choice, the God of your choice, whatever it may be, as long as you never injure the person or property of any other human being, which includes attempt to force your religion on them or create a different world that they have to live in because that's the world that you want, or subject them to your religious laws or beliefs or anything else. I believe that when Jesus Christ appeared on this earth, God in the flesh, you understand the concept of the Trinity?
Yes.
The three are individual, but each of the individuals are the one. You understand that? So when Jesus appeared on this earth, he was, in fact, God in the flesh. Whatever he said superseded and negated anything and everything that went before it that did not conform to what he said. Therefore, the only relevant scripture for any true Christian follower of the man, the God, known as Jesus the Christ, is the words of read in the Bible and no other. And if you study the history of the Bible and how it was put together and how the books were picked and chosen and formed as the Bible, that'll make you sit back and scratch your head.
Yes, and it is.
So I'm not telling you what to believe or that you have to believe as I believe. I'm just telling you what I believe, and maybe if you sit down and think about that, it might help you with what you believe.
What I'm doing is I'm listening to your Mystery Babylon series over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really scratching my head, yes.
Yeah, that'll rake you up. It'll make you scratch your heads. And it will give you a new outlook on everything that's happening in the world.
It sure will. That's about it, but I wish you would maybe further go into that subject. Maybe on a...
If you're talking about the subject of Christianity, my personal beliefs?
Yes.
No, I can't do that without turning this into a religious program with me preaching religion, and I will never do that.
Okay.
That is anathematic to the concept of liberty and freedom under the Constitution, which I believe must be followed.
Okay, or the parallelism between the mysteries and Christianity.
Well, I've done a lot on that in subsequent
yes.
tapes. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye now.
The original church was a formation based upon the fact that if Rome did not do something about it, Rome might fall because of the heretical teachings, or what was believed to be the heretical teachings at that time, of a sect of people who followed this person who had been crucified, called Jesus. And so, Rome did not fall as the history books would have you believe. Rome changed from a paganistic empire to the Christian Church and lives on today as the Vatican, as the Catholic Church. It is the Roman Empire. And to be able to survive, it could not just throw away all of the beliefs of the people whom it ruled. It had to incorporate many of those pagan holidays and beliefs into what they called Christianity. Now, many of you will disagree with that, and you will become violently enraged, and I will get a plethora of letters based upon your particular beliefs. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not trying to destroy your beliefs or your religion. I'm not trying to tell you what to believe. I'm telling you the reality of history. You see, religion and facts are two different things. Facts are something real that can be proven. Religion is faith of the individual in teachings that can neither be proved nor disproved by anybody. And that's why you cannot argue religion with anybody. It cannot be done. Because you are arguing faith against faith. And there is no argument there. And by argue, I don't mean come up against each other. I mean discourse. Exchanging opposing viewpoints and ideas. And be able to do it in a decent, rational, and considerate manner. I've often said, and I will continue to say, my religion is nobody's business, and your religion is none of my business, until your religion sets out to force your ideas, or your dogmas, or your rules, or your theocracy upon me. Then it becomes my business, and it becomes my business to oppose it, simply because you're trying to shove something down my throat that I don't want to have. You're impinging upon my freedom. You see, my freedom ends where yours begins, and yours ends where mine begins. Don't forget that. 520-333-4578 is the number. I believe in freedom. I believe in liberty for all peoples on the face of this earth, regardless of race, religion, or place of ancestral origin. And I'll fight and die to ensure that people remain free. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Mr. Cooper, this is Gary Stone from Nelsonville, Wisconsin. I called you one other time, and I forgot what I mentioned on the air. But did I ever tell you about H.R. 2431, the religious persecution bill?
I don't know if you did or not. Talk about it. I know about it, if you're asking me that, but talk about it. Maybe there's somebody in the audience who does not know.
Different sources on this bill, and they put it out like it's religious protection, but in fact it's persecution against religious beliefs and churches.
Wait a minute. Now, can you back that up?
Well, ex-nun puts out a paper here in Wisconsin.
No. Cite the portions of the bill that say what you're saying it does.
Well, okay.
Have you ever read the bill?
Not the bill itself, but the interpretation by different people.
You can't do that. You have to read it yourself, and when you call this program and say that a bill does a certain thing, you must be able to back that up with the sections in the bill. You can't call me up and cite hearsay from somebody else. How do you know they reported what was in the bill? How do you know they did not slant what they reported to make you believe something?
Well, that could be true, too, I suppose, you know.
Doesn't that make you want to go read the bill to find out what's true?
Yeah, but how could I do that? Go to Congress?
The same way that I can do it. You can get it off the internet. You can write to your congressman and have them send it to you. You can read the congressional record or the now it slipped my mind, the other one. But there's all kinds of ways. I'm surprised that you're an American and you don't know how to read what Congress passes. You should never believe what somebody tells you. And don't take this personal. I'm not picking on you.
No, I understand it. Another thing I wanted to say, you know, with this business, with the imports from China and from Mexico, don't the people realize eventually they won't be making nothing in this country? There'll be no more factories. And then they can fix any prices for anything on us that they please, you know.
Well, you're right about that, and I think the American people are going to discover that here real quick.
Yeah, we only got to pay $50,000 for a car, you know. Okay, Mr. Cooper.
Thank you for calling.
All right.
Oh, boy. Folks, when you call and cite some law or something, be prepared to, you know, back up what you say. Don't base what you say on what somebody else told you. That is the worst kind of, absolute worst kind of information that you can ever have. And to pass it on, just to pass it on without checking for yourself, is rumor mongering. Good evening. You're on the air.
Well, good evening, Mr. Cooper. How you doing?
Good.
I don't know. I'm just catching your program the second hour here, so I don't know if you've talked about this, but it's being whispered in the media now. They're connecting the R word with Bill Clinton.
What's R word?
Rape. Heard about this?
I just announced later that you're going to hear some big stories popping here within the next week.
Well, I tell you what, Rush Limbaugh, today I was listening to First Hour's program, and he claims that ABC is sitting on this story that Bill Clinton raped a woman, allegedly raped a woman, I think back in 1979, and there's a big fight in ABC on whether to go public with this. From what I understand, a lot of people already know about it. Matt Drudge.
And yeah, it doesn't matter. ABC doesn't matter anymore. It's already out. It's going to be a big story here pretty soon. And there's more. There's even more.
Well,
way beyond that. Worse, in fact.
One other story I'm hearing is that he had an interracial child by a black woman.
That's sure. Also true.
Yeah, I've heard that one. And I heard that the lady and the child have left the country.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something else. It's not whether or not the woman was black or the child was interracial. The fact is, it was a very bad thing to do. There's a child without a father.
Right. Well, first off, he was married to Hillary. Second off, he's not supporting the child. Third, I don't think a president, you should be a president in that kind of situation. I think you disqualify yourself.
You don't know Bill Clinton very well. He doesn't disqualify himself from anything. He's an arrogant jerk who thinks he can get away with anything he wants to and has been doing that all his life.
Well, I tell you what, I am getting more encouraged that he is going to be removed from office here very shortly. They're already telling him, some senators are saying, you need to leave quickly before this stuff goes public.
I'll tell you what's going to happen. If the Senate does not hold a trial, and if they do not hold an honest trial, which really looks at and considers the real evidence, which will lead them to a conviction and an ouster from office, if they fail to do that, very bad things are going to happen in this country. They will divide the country along the lines that will absolutely result in armed conflict.
Well, you know, Bill, I think it's a no-win situation either way, because you're right, if they don't, it's going to cause, I think, a civil war. But if they do, this nut in the White House is capable of anything.
Yes, he is.
He probably will do anything.
And he has a higher-ranking military officership, so to speak, that will carry out whatever he tells him to do.
Well, it seems to me that this Joint Chiefs of Staff, Shelton...
These are New World Order proponents who, by accepting the job, have agreed to forget about protecting and defending the Constitution for the United States of America. They are One World Order, United Nations police force officers. That's what they are bent upon doing, and that's what they will do if they are required or ordered to do it. Now, that does not go for all of the junior officers or junior field grade officers and non-commissioned officers throughout this country who may have a different idea about things.
What I'm fearful of is we're going to see, if the Senate goes at this seriously and tries to remove this ban, incidents that we saw, 3 years ago in Oklahoma City, and this president taking advantage of this.
You can be sure of that. That's one of the purposes for the Iraq War.
He
was wagging.
I see 1999. You know, the Chinese have an interesting saying, Bill. May you live in interesting times.
Well, we certainly are.
I think 1999 is probably going to be the most interesting year that America ever goes through.
Yeah. Did you notice that all of the backers of President Clinton are using that hate word toward anybody who supports the rule of law?
Communist tactic, you know that.
Yeah, it is taught in the communist school of propaganda and always has been in the Soviet Union.
Right.
And anybody who disagrees with the socialist movement in this country right now is dubbed a hater, a fundamentalist, a right-wing wacko, whether they are or not. For instance, they call me a right-wing white supremacist fundamentalist, and I could go on and on and on.
Right, anti-government.
Hate meister.
Yeah.
Anti-government when I am a liberal, always have been. I believe in and propound the great liberalism of the founding fathers. There is nothing in this world more liberal than liberty and freedom and the philosophies that promote those two concepts. Nothing whatsoever. These people are confused. They call people today liberals who want more legislation, more government control. None of those things are liberal. They are oppressive and lead in to tyranny.
You know, it's a statement's been made that freedom and liberty are not free, that you always have to pay the price with blood. And I unfortunately, I believe if America is going to...
Well, you know, you don't need much common sense to know that. If you are not willing to die for freedom, you should be able to understand that you cannot have it. Because all that someone has to do to take it away from you is threaten your life. And you will bow down and kiss their feet, kiss their rear, do whatever they want to keep from losing your life, and thus you give up your freedom. You cannot be free. You cannot have liberty or freedom unless you are willing to die for them. You must be willing to die for them. If you're not, they're history for you. You cannot have it. It will not be yours.
Well, I believe this with all my heart, Mr. Cooper, that 1999 is going to be either put up or shut up for the American people. They're going to have to decide.
Well, I think you may be right. I don't know for sure, but I think you may be right. In any case, if it's not 1999, it is sometime very soon.
God bless you, Mr. Cooper.
God bless you, too. Thank you for calling. 520-333-4578 is the number. If you haven't called to get your information package on Dr. Wallach and his recommendations on how you can improve your personal health, call 1-888-403-2405. That's 1-888-403-2405 or 1-888-701-0502. That's 1-888-701-0502. The lines are open. The number is 520-333-4578. You can call in and talk about whatever it is that you want to talk about. Oh, I know what I need to hear from. I need to hear from somebody who called in and got their ID number and ordered some of Dr. Wallach's products. If there's anybody out there who has done that, who called in the numbers that I gave you the other night, got your ID number, and called in and ordered, I need to hear from you. I need to hear how that's going. Good evening. You're on the air.
Bill, how would you...
I need you to talk a lot louder. I can barely hear you.
How would I go about getting in touch with you to get some information from you on the Behold a Pale Horse and the Mystery Babylon series and so on?
Call this number next week. Don't call the rest of this week because I'm going to be celebrating Christmas with my family.
Okay.
But call Monday afternoon this number that you called just now.
Okay.
And I'll answer the phone. Thank you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. All that stuff. 520-333-4578. I need to hear from somebody who called American Longevity, got their ID number, and ordered some of the products. I need to know how that's going. I need to know if you guys are doing that okay. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bill.
Yes.
How you doing tonight?
Good.
I live in the St. Louis region and I'm a fireman out here. And I was wanting to inform you on a couple things about it. We've been doing a lot of anti-terrorism training with this April visit coming.
Yeah.
I don't know about that or not.
They're doing it all over the country, and it has nothing to do with the papal visit. It's a matter of routine. But whenever they can tag a reason to it, it cons people into going along with it much easier than it would otherwise.
Yeah, but one of the things that I found interesting is it's the fire academy downtown here. They had a supposed meeting with these couple star generals that came in town.
Uh-huh.
For service agents and all this. They said that one of the best ways to spread a lot of these information is like tell the firemen that are keeping it real secret and everything. But they said the only time they get all these big generals in is they're bringing like 50 extra EMS units from Kansas City in. They got all these backup units coming in from St. Louis County and the surrounding counties.
I'd say something's going to blow up in St. Louis.
Yeah, that's what they're telling us. We just had a meeting.
Well, if they're telling you that something's going to blow up in St. Louis and they know it's going to happen, it means that they're going to do it. Because if they know it's going to happen, that means they know who is planning it and how they're going to do it. And if they have not arrested them or stopped it yet, it means that they're the ones who want it to happen and have set the wheels into motion, just like Oklahoma City.
You just see the anti-terrorism train. They said the patriot groups are bad for America. They said all these extremists owning these guns. I mean, it fed me up. Me and a couple of the other guys in my crew were like, my God, what is this? You
know? That's funny. In World War II, the Korean War, and Vietnam, they said patriots were good for America, didn't they?
I mean, they're dumping so much propaganda on it. It's unbelievable.
Well, unfortunately, it's the sheeple that buy it. Intelligent people do not buy it and know exactly what they're talking about and what they intend. The reason that they are demonizing patriots is because patriots are the ones who will fight them when they bring this country to its knees and attempt to establish in public for everybody to see one world government under a socialist tyranny.
Yeah, they're sitting there, and I mean, this meeting they called with us, they're just keep on labeling us. They're like, there's going to be a massive, because the city of St. Louis has every person they have on overtime, supposedly. I mean, three times the units they normally have, and I mean, they're expecting over a million people in the city just for the papal visit. They're like, I might just take vacation and get out of town for a little bit. It's just, I don't know.
Well, if that's what they're doing, that's what I would recommend. Remember that these American generals that are promoted now are not American patriots. They are one world order proponents. They have flushed the Constitution, and they have no loyalty to the Constitution or the United States of America, despite the oath that they have taken.
And another thing they're labeling to it is all the problems with Iraq and the Muslims. They're like, this is going to be their time to strike, too, so they might plan on that.
Of course.
It's amazing. You just sit there, and they're sitting there, I mean, totally propagandizing you like the Nazis did to the Germans, all, you know, I'm like, my God.
Sure. Well, they're doing the exact same thing, using the Nazi tactics that they learned from the Germans.
But these people I work with, they lap it up like a dog that hasn't drank water in like 3 weeks, you know. I'm like, my God, can't you see this? There's only a couple of us that talk about it, and it's like, oh, well.
How could they see it? I mean, what did they learn in school? What do they watch? Where do they get their information from?
Well, I mean, I'm in my mid-20s, and everybody looked at me and was like, well, you're just a Christian extremist radical, blah, blah, blah.
They bought it hook, line, and sinker, huh?
I'm like, well, I read up on some stuff, and I read a couple of your books, and going down the line, and all these other publications, and I'm like,
Now, Christians are Orthodox Jews, people who belong to the Mohammedan religion, the Nation of Islam, are all scheduled for extinction in the New World Order. I've told you that over and over again. I've read it in their own writing. I've quoted them verbatim. Look at Al Gore's book. Did you read Al Gore's book? He says in that book, this is the Vice President of the United States of America, says all of the bad things that have ever happened in the history of the world were caused by Christians, and if all of the Christians were suddenly removed from this earth, it would be a good place to live. That's the Vice President of the United States, the man who will jump into the presidency if Clinton is removed from office.
They're like, well, the lesser of two evils. Like you said the other night, no, there is. You don't take an evil over an evil.
That's right. Whether it's lesser or greater, it's still a deal with the devil, isn't it?
Right.
I don't deal with the devil.
But kind of funny, they ship me and the other kind of guys that think like those all in the same engine house now, so that's, we can get some stuff done down there just reading. Left alone.
Good.
All right, well, thanks for your time. I just want to inform you about that, how much propaganda I think they're doing up here in St. Louis with the papal visit.
Oh, yes, they are.
Oh, it's going to be a terrorist strike again, and they're, I mean, the Secret Service is even involved. I don't know. I just thought I can't believe, you know?
Well, I believe it. It's no mystery to me. I wrote it in my book many, many years ago.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, when I was writing my book, I put all of this in there. Everything that I put in there has come true, exactly as I said it would. It's amazing.
Like I said, I'm glad there's still people like you out there. I mean, you really, really opened my eyes. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for calling. The reason I'm here, ladies and gentlemen, is simply and only because I am not afraid to die. Because I would rather be dead than be a slave. And that I understand and I know in my heart, in my mind, and I know that this is exactly the way that God meant it to be, that if I want to live free, I must be ready and willing to die for freedom. Most people have never learned that. They're so afraid of dying. Yet they claim to know God, whatever their religion is. They claim to know God and understand what the universe is all about. And they can sit down and talk for hours with you about their religion and everything. But when you ask them to stand up and do the right thing that God would want them to do, they won't do it because they're afraid. They're cowards. And if they're cowards, they don't know God. They certainly cannot be Christians. I've studied the Jewish religion. They can't be Jews. The real religious Jews of history died rather than be enslaved. Study Masada. They certainly can't be followers of the Nation of Islam, the Prophet Muhammad. Because they believe that to oppose evil in the name of God guarantees your place in heaven. So what are we? A nation of hypocrites and liars? Atheists? Utopian dreamers? Karl Marx bootlickers? Followers of Vladimir Lenin? Who believed that the state was God and man was nothing? That men should be sacrificed for the betterment of the state? You better hope that these people never get their way, because the individual becomes nothing in such systems. Nothing of no importance whatsoever. All of you who follow these treasonous doctrines will be in for a big surprise. Especially if you are the vanguard that helps bring it to be, because you are the ones that they always murder first once they come to power. Don't believe me? Study history. Study what Castro did when he came to power in Cuba. He got rid of Che Guevara by sending him to other countries to foment revolution and didn't want him back in Cuba because he was dangerous. He knew how to lead a revolution. Look what the communists did in Russia after they gained power. They had great cleansings where they got rid of everybody who did it. Same in communist China. Same everywhere in the world where socialism and or communism has triumphed. I feel sorry for these stupid people who call themselves the intelligentsia, who really think that they have good, clear, clean minds and that they're doing the right thing for all humanity. Socialism and communism hates those people. They use them until they come to power, and then without fail, every single time it's ever happened, those people are all murdered. All of them. Doctors, lawyers, university professors, psychologists, all of them murdered. 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 Stop listening to the lies of those who promote and teach Marxist socialism as the answer to the problems of the world, and read the truth about history when these philosophies came to power. And then join us in the fight against it.
Here's what they said. Quote, after 3 months it was clear that the drug was beneficial, unquote. Chicken cartilage had become a drug in 90 days. Now, why would that happen? Well, because you can't patent chicken cartilage. And they convinced at the U.S. Patent Office that they were using a drug to do this study. And they actually got a use patent on chicken cartilage. And you, too, for $3,500 a month, can get Harvard Medical School's chicken cartilage in a capsule for arthritis. Now, you can get it for 30 cents a day. Okay? It's kind of interesting. And, of course, cartilage or gelatin has chondroitin sulfate in it, glucosamine sulfate, collagen. These are all the basic raw materials to rebuild cartilage and bone. Now, again, I've been telling my human patients this for 20 years. I've been using gelatin and cartilage for racehorses for 100 years for their cartilage and ligaments and joints. And in 1995, a Luke Bucci, an exercise physiologist, came out with a great book called Pain Free, and he talks about the advantages of gelatin and cartilage and glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin sulfate and collagen for regrowing cartilage, ligaments, tendons, connective tissue, bone foundation, bone matrix. Does this with nutrition. Does it with glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin sulfate and collagen in cartilage and gelatin. Just a couple of months ago, a medical doctor, Dr. Jason Theodosakis, MD, wrote The Arthritis Cure. Subtitle, The Medical Miracle That Can Halt, Reverse, and May Even Cure Osteoarthritis. Now, certainly the scariest disease in the United States is cancer. Everybody is very horrified when it comes to even talk about cancer. People get nervous. And in my tape, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, I talked about the anti-cancer diet that was found. Everybody goes berserker when I say things like that. No, there's no such thing as an anti-cancer diet. And there you see it. This is a newspaper article. This was actually a news release by the National Cancer Institute. They did a five-year study in Henan Province, China. And they chose to go to Henan Province, China, because it has the highest rate of cancer in the whole world. It took 29,000 people, normal healthy people, between the ages of 40 and 69, divided them up into small groups, gave each group a different vitamin, different mineral, combinations of vitamins and minerals, to see if any nutrient or combinations of nutrients would reduce this horrible rate of cancer in Henan Province. What they found out was if you take a single vitamin, don't expect too much positive to happen. And we're not too surprised at that. Linus Pauling, one of our favorite sons here in California, two Nobel Prizes, took 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day for 35 years, still died of prostate cancer at age 93, 7 years short of the magic number of 100. Well, they did find one group that showed significant benefit. This group got 20 cents a day worth of three nutrients, pitifully low dose, double the American RDA, beta-carotene, vitamin E, and a trace mineral selenium. This group showed a reduction in deaths from all causes by 9%. Suicide, car accidents, things like pneumonia, heart disease, ruptured aneurysms, diabetes, and cancer. They reduced all cancer deaths in this group by 13%. And the type of cancer most common in Henan province, China, stomach cancer and lower esophageal cancer, they reduced by 21%, saved almost 1 out of 4 who are projected to die from esophageal and stomach cancer, just simply with these 3 nutrients, beta-carotene, vitamin E, and selenium. There was a redo on this by the University of Arizona, and this study was published in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, December 25th, 1996, on Christmas Day. And this should have been the greatest healing and medical story in history, in recorded history. It did not even make the top 10 Associated Press news stories for 1996. That's how biased the medical profession is against nutrition. This should have been the greatest health story in recorded history. The University of Arizona Medical School took 1,300 people, put them on 250 to 500 micrograms of selenium every day, and for 10 years they looked at them for skin cancer, and it didn't help skin cancer. We know that because selenium doesn't work for skin cancer. It's zinc and beta-carotene and vitamin E works for skin cancer. But they found out serendipitously, they weren't expecting this, this just sort of popped out of the study, they were able to reduce esophageal cancer by 71%. They were able to reduce prostate cancer, fellas, by 69%, better than two-thirds. They were able to reduce colon and rectal cancer by 64%, almost two-thirds. They were able to reduce lung cancer, whether you smoked or not, by 48%. And ladies, in a parallel study from the University of California by the great Dr. Gerhard Schrauser, he said you can reduce your risk of breast cancer, depending on the type of breast cancer, by 50 to 85% by taking 250 to 500 micrograms of selenium every day. The last medical cocktail we want to look at before we get into the longevity stuff is exercise. How many of you ever heard, raise your hand, how many of you ever heard that exercise is good for you? Yeah, you're asleep at the wheel if you haven't heard that one. Well, if that were true, people who exercise should live longer than people who are couch potatoes, right? The average couch potato in America lives to be 75.5. The average athlete, depending on the sport and the level of competence, lives to be 62 to 68. So there's something wrong with this theory that exercise alone is good for you. I want you to think about Jim Fix, who died in 1984 at age 52. Jim Fix was running 10 miles a day from the early 60s, believing that if you ran 10 miles a day, 7 days a week, you'd live to be over 100. And he refused to take vitamins and minerals because he believed that he would muddy the water, and he wanted to prove that it was the exercise that helped you live to be over 100. And so he refused to take any vitamins and minerals and trace minerals. When he was 52 years old, he had 5 cardiomyopathy heart attacks, 5 selenium deficiency heart attacks in his 52nd year. The 5th one killed him. When they did the autopsy on Jim Fix, you know, when they open you up, they take a little scissors and they open up all your arteries like little tubes, and they said, gosh, his arteries as clean as a newborn baby's. But he had a huge technical problem. His heart was dead. Doesn't matter how clean your arteries are. If your heart's dead, doesn't matter, does it? Then you look at people like Jesse Owens, won 4 gold medals in track and field in the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, died at age 66. The Flying Finns, who were the Olympic team for track and field for Finland during the 20s and 30s, they dominated 3 Olympics in a row, won most of the gold, most of the silver, almost all the bronze medals during those 3 Olympics, 2 in the late 20s and in the first Olympics in the 30s. They dominated everybody. None of them lived to be 70 years of age. Well, here's the last one on exercise before we get into the longevity stuff. Dr. Michael P. Ortiz, 38 years old, was also a runner, and this guy ran all through junior high and high school and college and medical school. And when he graduated, he still loved exercise and believed it was good for you. And he tried to carry this love of exercise to his patients, and he gave them a 10% discount on his medical services if they would run with him 2 weeks out of every month. And on this particular fateful day, Dr. Michael P. Ortiz, 38 years old, was jogging with a big group, you know, gallery of his patients, kind of like Forrest Gump, running down this road with this huge gallery of patients. And he collapsed and died in front of his horrified patients, and it was billing week. Now, nobody stopped to give him CPR because they didn't want to lose that 10% discount on his services. Now, if you do everything right, how old can you live to be? Is it worth all the effort? I believe it is. Here's one. Christian Mortensen from San Rafael, California, in August of 1995, turned 113. August of 1996, he turned 114. He's still going strong. Certainly can live to be 115. Smokes a couple of cigars a day like George Burns, who also lived to be over 100. Certainly, was, I guess the only exercise George Burns ever did was put the cigars in his mouth. And then you have this guy plays golf twice a week. This gal here, Dora Ramathebe from South Africa, in July of 1995, turned 114. And when she was asked by the media, Dora, what do you attribute your health and longevity to? She did not say that we owe it all to our annual physical or our HMO. She said, I ate locusts every day. You know, a little grasshopper. She's not a vegetarian. She eats little animals. Pumpkin seeds, tortoise meat, wild herbs, dried fruit, and starch each day with a cup of coffee. This gal here, Margaret Skeets from Radford, Virginia, in 1994 was the oldest documented living American when she died at age 115. Fell over and fractured her hip. 3 weeks later, she was dead from complications of osteoporosis, a simple calcium deficiency. And we'll talk more about this in a minute. Unfortunately, this is not unusual. 75% of all Americans over the age of 65 who fracture a hip or major leg bone don't live 90 days. They die of pneumonia, pulmonary embolism, stroke, and other complications of that fracture. And this gal is one of my favorites, Jean Calment from France. She rode her bike as a volunteer librarian in Paris for 105 years. February 21st, 1995, she turned 120, and she was documented by the Guinness World Book of Records as the oldest documented living woman in the world. They said there's others who claim to be older than she, but they didn't have the paperwork to prove it. February 21st, 1996, she turned 121. February 21st, 1997, she turned 122. She's still going strong and has no intention of dying yet. Susie Brunson, according to her family, in December of 1994, was the oldest American when she died at age 123. And they based her claim on her birth date, December 25th, 1870, which is recorded in the family Bible. And this fellow here, Francisco Barrasanueva Chaparina, October 1995. He was from a little town outside of Bogota, Colombia, turned 125. When he was asked by the media, Francisco, what do you attribute your health and longevity to? He said, well, I drink a gallon of goat's milk every day. Also, it's kind of fascinating in his birthday announcement. This is not an obituary. This is a birthday announcement. Said that over 40 years ago, his physicians told him he only had a couple of months to live, so he had his sons build him a coffin. And he's been waking up every morning for more than 40 years, sitting by that coffin waiting to die. Nighttime comes, he goes to bed, wakes up the next morning, sits by the coffin, waits to die. Now, he's still going strong, and all the doctors who told him that more than 40 years ago are long since dead. Now, this fellow here, Hamoudi El Abdullah from Syria, July of 1993, about, what, 3.5 years ago, died at age 133, and he was still fathering children after the age of 100. He remarried for the fourth time when he was age 80, fathered 4 boys, 5 girls, 9 children after the age of 80 with the same wife. And if you add up the pregnancies and the breastfeeding, the time in between pregnancies, he was still fathering children after the age of 100. Now, this very next one is my very, very favorite. This gal, Mizumi Dusti from Iran, according to the Rocky Mountain News Wire Services out of Denver and the Iranian News Agency, this was January of 1995, a little over 2 years ago, she died at age 161. Now, you have to give a certain amount of credibility to this obituary report that she died at age 161. Because she was survived by 6 living children ranging in age from 120 to 128. They hadn't even left home to go to college yet. Now, her oldest son, Golam, said his mother had never visited a doctor nor taken any chemical medications during her life, did take a few herbs. So, if you kind of think about it, every one of these people who lived to be over 100, 120, 130, 160, these people are not from United States or Canada or Germany or England. Kind of interesting, isn't it? Most of them are from third world countries. They're furthest away from medical help. And they live the old. So then we're beginning to collect information here.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that just about does it for tonight's broadcast. You know what all those people have in common? They eat natural food grown in fertile land that has not been demineralized. They drink water from mountain streams and wells. Are you listening to me? They have the natural nutrition that God meant for us to have. Not all the phony additives and preservatives and filtered chlorinated water, demineralized vegetables grown in soil that haven't seen any minerals since the turn of the century. You can change all that. You can change your nutrition. You can change your health. Now, I'm going to tell you right now that all of these products that Dr. Wallach has made a new man out of me. I used to have excruciating pain in my legs. I used to take a minimum of 16 Advil a day, sometimes as much as 20 or 24, every day. Until Michael Cottingham turned me on to aspen bark. Then I chewed aspen bark for a long, long time until the bitterness just overcame me, and I went back to Advils again so I didn't have to put up with the constant bitterness of the aspen bark and chewing my cud all the time. I must have looked like a cow. And aspen bark up here is plentiful. Since I have been taking Dr. Wallach's pig arthritis formula, all of the pain in my legs has disappeared. I feel renewed. I feel energized. As Billy Goodman said once on his radio broadcast, I feel electrified. I feel really good. I'm sleeping better. My eyesight has improved. And several other things. If you even get a little bit of the benefits that I've realized through following Dr. Wallach's advice, you're going to be extremely happy. Happy beyond anything that you ever dreamed. Call 1-888-403-2405. That's 1-888-403-2405 or 1-888-701-0502. That's 1-888-701-0502. Don't forget, folks, to send in a contribution for our television project. Every penny will go toward our television project to the Hour of the Time in care of 98.5 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. That's the Hour of the Time in care of 98.5 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925, USA. Good night, folks, and God bless each and every single one of you. Gentlemen, be sure and tune in tomorrow night, Christmas Eve, for a very special edition of the Hour of the Time. That's tomorrow night, Christmas Eve, for a very special edition of the Hour of the Time. Thank you. You're listening to 98.5 FM, Eager, Arizona. We return you now to All Oldies Most of the Time.